Hey, 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 welcome back to the Almas Podcast. This is season one, episode five, and we have a wonderful gentleman with us today. His name is Willie. I've had a conversation with him already, and I learned so much. There was just so much in that conversation that I found to be truly inspiring, empowering, and I can't wait for you to hear from him. Willie, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the Almas Podcast.
Thank you for having me. So my name is Willie, and I'm a world citizen. Grew up in Europe and North America and Africa, with parents from Africa and from the Caribbean. I have a really good aspect of living as a Black person. You know, I know people from all over the world. I am an entrepreneur since a young age, and I am passionate about a lot of different projects. I'm always chasing something, and that's pretty much who I am. I'm blessed to actually be able to focus and have the time to chase my passion.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. It's really good to have you. And there's so much there that you shared that I'm excited to dive into. I definitely want to hear more about your experience as a Black man throughout your life in different spaces. But let's start with, you've been an entrepreneur since a very young age. I've heard some of these stories, but the audience obviously has not. So can you tell us how that all began for you?
Well, funny thing is, my parents are the furthest from being entrepreneurs, but there was an interesting dynamic in our household. My dad was a doctor, but he was very interested in business, and my mom was a government employee, and she really believed in, getting a job and joining a company as early as possible and try to reach the top. So that there was a dynamic from a very young age where my mom was kind of like, study, make sure that you do your homework so you can have better grades, so you can eventually go to a good school and then get a good job. Where my dad was kind of like, learn all these things. And when he was a young man, he was he had an entrepreneurial spirit. And when he was 14 and 15, he got into fixing radios and TVs, which at that time was really something amazing for a young person to do. But his parents steered him to studying to become a doctor. Okay, he excelled at that. But then, as a doctor, you don't have as much time to build a business, So he kind of like took that aspect of his life that he wasn't able to go after and put it on me. So he always told me, hey, learn how to do this, then you'll be able to do this. And he kept me really occupied when I was a child with different projects. And that opened up my mind. I think that I was already interested into it naturally, but it just kind of pushed me out there. So where it all started is in the mid 80s, my dad, because he fixed TVs and radios, he kind of liked electronics and this type of stuff. So he always had a lot of gadgets. Okay, so in the mid 80s, he bought a laptop. Now, I don't know if you guys know what that means. That cost a lot of money at that time. The laptop was really thick. It was more like a desktop today. A desktop today is probably thinner than the laptop that he bought. But I was about 6 years old when he brought that home. Okay.
Yeah.
And when he bought the first laptop, there wasn't Windows or this type of software. It was DOS. And you had to like write all kinds of syntax and stuff like that to do what you needed to do. Okay. So obviously, I was very interested into the computer, and and he would, put me on the computer, show me a couple of things, but I would also sneak and use a computer, and I crashed the computer a bunch of times
You're six at this point, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So they actually literally had to hide the computer from me, because once I got into the computer, I couldn't get off of it. And that grew into, in the late 80s, a lot of software that we know today, like Windows and Adobe, these type of companies came up with a couple of software. For me, where it took a turn, where my start in business actually began, is when we, when my dad bought the first Windows, and then he installed Adobe. Mm-hmm. I'm going blank. I forget the name. but essentially, it was a desktop publishing software, and my dad had me, design some flyers for his side business,
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like a game. I really loved to design those things. Eventually, some of my dad's friend came around and noticed that I was designing flyers. They were like amazed, And then they were just like, hey, can you design this, design that? I'll give you $10. I'll give you $20. And that's pretty much how it started. I mean, I didn't realize that I was in business until I became a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I didn't start actually thinking about business until around that time. Okay. But around the time I became a teenager, we moved from France to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole immigrant experience changed a lot of dynamic. My parents mm-hmm. had to work really hard. And I was kind of like just, I used a computer. And it was a funny time too, because my dad was still into computers and stuff like that. And my dad taught himself how to program C++, this type of stuff, So we only had one computer when we moved to the U.S., So I had to wait till my dad finished using the computer, But I had a neighbor who was a geek, and he introduced me to a bunch of different things. And, I had a huge interest in it. And again, it created a situation where, my dad noticed I'm in the computer, I'm trying to learn all this stuff, and he needed to build a website. This is like mid-90s, like nobody has a website, right?
Yeah.
So he figured out that I can probably build it, because he tried, but he's not learning as fast, right? So this is a summer where I was 15 years old around that time.
Yeah.
And so he bought a book, and I still remember this book. This book was over 1,000 pages. And the title of the book was Everything You Need to Know About Web Design. And when I'm telling this book was complete, I mean, towards the back of the book, there was, hex codes, right? There was a complete hex code dictionary type thing, right, at the end. So if you're looking for a particular color, you go to the back of the book and you'll find it there, right? So he was like, you need to read this book. You need to learn how to do this. And this is around a time where I really want to hang out with my friends outside. But that didn't happen. I ended up building my dad a website. And from that point on, I've been building websites. And that's essentially a little bit how I came into business, because now I knew desktop publishing, I knew how to build websites, and I had been, building computers, because around that time computers were very expensive. So actually, if you buy the parts and put it together, it would be literally a third of the price. So I built one computer with my dad, and then I continued doing that, and I actually started doing that as a business when I was around 16, 17, the church where we're going, a couple of people would say, I want to buy a computer, and obviously that time I was in business, but I was as much of a businessman as I am now. So I would just give myself a little bit of money on the top. So people would be getting really great deals from me, So I would build it and then take it to their house. And obviously when they had issues, they would call me and stuff like that. So around that time, especially late 90s, you know, there was a lot of interest into the internet and all this stuff. And I started my business. I actually ended up opening a store in Atlanta where I was living at the time. I ended up opening a computer store, and that was my first official business, which didn't last long because I knew nothing about business and my parents were not business people. And that was my first business failure. Not because I wasn't good at what I was doing, but I'll give you an example. When the location that I was renting for my computer store, when I moved into that location, the business that was there before was a bakery. So obviously they didn't have like all the plugs and all that stuff for a computer shop, right? So when I moved in, you know, first thing you order is the internet. So the internet company comes to install, you know, the lines or whatever. And they're like, you know what, there's no lines here to do anything, right? So they're like, okay, well, don't worry about it. We'll get the, you know, the specialist to come and install all the stuff. So they did, and I received a huge bill, you know, which ended up going into a collection because I couldn't pay it because I just started business and I get a huge bill. And then there were other things like that that I'd never freaking could have imagined that came along. So a year later, I was behind on rent on different things. I didn't charge my customers enough, this type of stuff. I learned a lot from that. And I closed my first business at that time. Okay, but it was a blessing in disguise, because around that time, one of my clients that bought a computer for me called me because he had an issue with his computer, you know, and I told him, well, you know, I'm in a bad situation right now. I just closed the shop and this type of stuff. And he told me, you know, well, you know, if you don't have anything to do, I'm in the mortgage business, you know. And right now we're looking for mortgage agents. This is like right like 99 when the mortgage business is about to take off. He said, you could just come. We have a week training. Okay. And obviously mortgage, when you think about mortgage, it's like older people in that business. I was like 19 when I got in that business and they were not using computers, right? The place where I was working, they had a room of forms for all the different forms, you know. So I went there, had my training. When I went there, I didn't even know what a mortgage was. My parents had bought their first home a couple of years before that, but I wasn't part of the process, so I didn't know anything about mortgage. So I took the course, and the financial aspect that I needed to know to run a business, then I learned it all in that business, because we are talking about, you know, it's all financial people in there, right? Okay. I ended up, doing very well in mortgage, which funded a lot of the things that I'm doing up until now. Yes. So I started a company at that time that was called My Big Money Tree, because I was doing finances. I had my little computer and web design business on the side. You know, I started doing insurance at some point. So I tried a lot of stuff. I sold a lot of stuff around that time. So I really learned a lot about business, you know. It really created the person that I am right now. I'm fortunate for that experience. And in the process, I was able to, better my finances, which allowed me to fund some of the things I always wanted to do, kind of like Afrobase, this directory that I've built. And there are a bunch of other things that I'm doing on the internet.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you. That was such a great story. I felt like I was on a magical carpet ride through your life. That was really nice. I definitely would love for you to talk about Afrobiz in a moment. Before I do that, I just want to say, so it sounds like you have pretty much been solving problems most of your life, you know, because of the environment that you were in. And I guess because of the natural inclination that was present, the combination of those two things really just presented you with opportunities to solve problems that you saw in front of you, like the building computers for people at church. I'm wondering, what is the most interesting problem you have solved so far?
Well, you know what? I'm really curious about so many different subjects and things like that. I would say building Afrobeats, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. But I would say that was probably the most enlightening thing that I have done. The reason why is because all of the businesses that I've done before, it was kind of like my business, and I was dealing with customers, and I had as much control as possible that you can have in most of the situations. So for example, you know, somebody walk in, they want to buy a house, you know, there's the application process, the expanding, you know. So it was always a situation where, you know, people, when they hire you as an expert, you know, they kind of listen to you, you have some of the controls, and then you kind of know everything about that particular situation. With Afrobiz, it was an idea, and, you know, there are some things that I didn't even know about challenges of Black-owned business, even though I had my own businesses and I had my own challenges, but I did not know some of the challenges that people have. Now, I've always been in the, you know, digital world for a long time, and it's completely natural for me. If I open a business, you know, I'm going to open my corporation, and I'm going to go, and then I'm going to build my website. So by the time I'm actually ready to go, I look like I'm already in business. Whereas in the community, we actually have, you know, a shortage of knowledge on how to start businesses. So people really start just from emotions, you know, just they get up today, they're like, you know, I can do this. And they're going to start with absolutely no knowledge, which is, you know, a courageous thing to do, but not necessarily a good thing. I mean, a lot of people will learn and stuff like that, but for the most part, a lot of people will crash and burn, you know? So what happened is I was in a position where I felt a little bit helpless, because Afrobeats started as an idea to help, because eventually, essentially in the beginning, before I even have this idea, I wanted to create, because I knew there was a gap in the technology side. So I want to create ways to improve Black-owned businesses' presence online. Right. So I would reach a business and I would say, hey, you know what? This is what I can do for you. You know, and they'll say a couple of things. They'll say like, yo, that sounds really interesting. I get back with you. Or they'll say, what my budget is like $2, you know, this type of stuff. And it didn't make sense, because it's like, OK, well, this is what it can do for you. But come to find out, well, you know, that's really a funding problem. Right. And then it was like, well, it's a funding problem, but there are still costs to do the things that you need to do. So I had to come up with an idea to, lower these costs and share a platform where I can do what I'm trying to do for this business, but for a whole bunch of business at the same time. That's where the idea Afrobiz came. But I've really learned a lot. It was a really challenging thing when I think about where we started and where we are today. I've learned a whole lot. And you know what's so funny is that, you know, they just announced the Black Entrepreneurs Loan Fund, which is something else that, you know, we talk about. But I was thinking that, you know what, Trudeau, you know, I'm like, wow, this guy doesn't even know that, you know, this is not really going to solve the problem. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot that he's going to learn, right? Which is good, because if we are learning over time, you know, things are going to improve. But essentially, when you start, you know, and you go after something that's way bigger than you, then you realize that, you know, how small you are actually in the world. But at the same time, you know, you if you're a problem solver, you're going to figure a way to kind of bridge, like, you know, build a bridge the gap. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, bridge the gap. It sounds like that's exactly what you did. I think this is definitely a good time for you to start talking about AfroBiz, but I want you to elaborate a little more about the process of how this idea went from, you know, I want to help Black-owned businesses with their online presence, and then, you know, how do I cut the costs down for people? So how did that turn into what AfroBiz is today? And really what I'm asking about is, did you sit down and brainstorm? Did you have conversations with various people, maybe get some advice? How did you come up with the actual solution?
Well, you know, one thing about me that, you know, sometimes I think it's a weakness, sometimes I think it's a strength, because I grew up in so many different environments, I was always an outcast, you know. So when I was a child in France, so when I was in second grade, we moved to Cameroon in Africa. At that point, I'm just a little French kid with a French accent, and we moved to Africa, and my mom is from the French West Indies, so when we moved there, of course, your mom is the one that take care of you, so she was also learning about, you know, African culture and stuff like that, right? So I was really different from other kids. And my dad, usually when French people go to Africa, they send their kids to French school, right? My dad was adamant that I go to public school, you know? So public school, they really thought that it's weird that, you know, I'm like, I dress, you know, different. I talk different. So kids made a lot of fun of me when I was in school in Africa, okay? Eventually, we lived there 3 years. When I went back to France, I had an African accent. Okay.
Now you're not.
You know, so this is right around the time that I go to middle school, you know, and you can only imagine if you go back to middle school, how kids treat kids that are different, right? Now, France has changed a lot. You know, around the time I was going to school, there was always a large Black community in Paris where I went to school, but not like now. A lot of immigrants came like in the late 90s and 2000. But at that time, you know, Black people were still like a big minority. So coming from Africa, you know, back to France, I mean, you stand out like big time, you know. Kids will make fun of my accent. You know, so I was an outcast then, you know, then we moved to the U.S. where you don't even speak the language, right? You know, and because we moved so much, I never got to really, immerse myself in my parents' cultures. You know, mm-hmm. West Indian and African. You know, my dad, he didn't cook. You know, so my mom cooked West Indian food, right? Okay. So I start eating like actually food from where my dad is from when I was like, I was an adult when I start eating this type of food,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, where my mom is from, I visited there for the first time, you know, 10 years ago, you know. So I was 30 years old, you know, when I visit where my mom is from for the first time. I always mm-hmm. listened to music and ate the food and stuff like that. But I was never, you know, I could never call myself West Indian, because another West Indian person would be like, no, you're not, right? That being said, it's a little bit of a weakness because I never belonged to a group of people, right? Mm-hmm. So when I came to Toronto, you know, so Toronto is basically a lot of Jamaicans, you know, and Nigerians. So these are not even groups that, you know, I directly, you know, connect with like that, you know. So when I came up with the idea of helping out the community, it wasn't as easy as, you know, I'm already part of the community and like, hey, here's what I do, you know. Mm-hmm. I literally had to reach out to people that think completely different from the way that I think, mm-hmm. you know. So that was interesting, you know. And essentially, that's where I start when I deal with people, because I'm very different from the fact that I traveled in different places, different thinking. So as a Black person, I don't necessarily feel that I'm a Black person just like every other Black person. You know, not that every other Black person is the same, but, you know, I have a unique experience, you know, sort of, you know, a saying, right? I have this whole perspective that, you know, when I was younger, you know, nothing is going to stop me to do whatever I want to do because I'm Black, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I just did whatever I did, you know. And being Black was not something that was in the back of my mind constantly, you know? Mm-hmm. So I always believe when I sat down with a Black person and we're going to talk business, I always believe that that's not as much of a factor. The main factor is, do you want to succeed in that space? You know? Mm-hmm. And I still believe that, you know, that it's more about you as a person than your race or your, you know, I understand there's, I mean, I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay. It's a city with a lot of Black people, but at the same time, it's a city, there's a lot of prejudice in Georgia. Everybody in the world knows that, right? You know, when I was young, I got pulled over a lot by the cops, you know, like a lot, like hundreds of times, right? You know, and I've had situations where, you know, clearly the situation happened because of the color of my skin, but that was never a huge topic in my life, you know. And I've always encouraged everybody who's in business, you know, to not focus so much on that, you know, because it's more about what you offer to your clients and how you offer it. You know, for example, you know, if you have a client and you're supposed to call them at 8 o'clock and then you call them at 10 o'clock, you know, it doesn't matter the color of your skin. They're probably not going to do business with you on the long run. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where I start when it's business. You know, from my experience, I don't think it's as much impactful in business. You know, I think if you really want it, you're going to get it. However, you cannot discount the fact that there are people who do not want to do business with you. I've had people who actually told me in my face, I don't want to do business with you, like right here in Canada, because they didn't say because you're Black, but, you know, they suggested it, right? Okay. Yeah. And I respect that, you know, I respect that because, hey, you know what? Well, thanks for telling me, you know. And but I know everybody in Canada or around the world is not thinking that way. I think, you know, I would like to believe the majority is more progressive than that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very complex issue. There's a lot of, you know, on the one hand, what you're saying about, you know, it really, most of it depends on you as a person and your mindset, your attitude, what you're willing to go, the lengths you're willing to go to. You know, on one hand, that's fair and true. And it can definitely take you pretty far. And on the other hand, there's also a lot of systemic racism and a lot of issues that, you know, it is because of those issues. This is just my opinion. Yeah. It is because of those issues and the disadvantages and the kind of intricacies of the impact of that some people don't even get to the part where they have that mindset or that attitude that you have. Because there's so much sort of conditioning and, you know, ideas and beliefs around who we are as people that influences our actions and our behaviors and the direction that we're willing to go. And you know, a lot of that does go right back to the systemic racism and the traumas and all, just all of the things that are wrong. So like, it's a really tough one because I think about examples of people where, say, they're a single income family, you know, maybe a couple in a rented townhouse or something, and they've got five children, and you know, it's one income, they're living paycheck to paycheck, none of the people in that scenario were ever taught about the different options. They never came across different options. They just have no idea that they can do something else with their lives, that there is, you know, opportunity to turn things around. They have no, there's just no awareness there. And that awareness is a legacy of, you know, colonization and that kind of thing. And that's just really hard to change. And the only way really to change it is to, for people like you and myself and others to keep trying to make those changes and keep, you know, showing up in the world in a way that has a positive impact on others in the spaces that we occupy. Because little by little, hopefully that changes, especially for, you know, the next generation of people. But it's really, it's a really complex issue. Like I hear you, what you're saying. I was listening to you sharing your story, and I've had a pretty similar, you know, upbringing of lots of moving around and that kind of thing. On the other hand, I didn't have a parent who, you know, was very interested and encouraging, you know, interested in learning different things or encouraging me to learn different things. I didn't have access to things like a computer or things like that, you know, not for a very long time. There were a lot of environmental factors that, you know, that influenced what you thought you were capable of throughout your life that just weren't there for me, for example. And so when I think of someone who maybe had a life that was much worse off, it's, you know, unless you come across someone like you and have a conversation and, you know, you tell them, hey, like you can do anything. Here's how you can get started. Here's what you can do. Unless you meet someone like that, or you read a book or you see it somewhere, you're not going to know it's possible. And so if you don't know it's possible, it just, you're not going to do anything.
Right.
So it's, yeah, I guess, you know, what I'm trying to say is, yes, I agree with you. Attitude is definitely very important. Mindset is important. And I think there's also room to acknowledge that the legacy of colonization is very real. And it's had tremendous impact on so many lives. Just in the fact that this kind of knowledge was just never presented to them.
Right. Yeah. And I completely agree, because you know, when I came to Canada, funny enough, I had not had a corporate job yet, you know, my mom was, you know, kind of like, hey, you're starting out in a new country, so get a job. You know, my mom was always, even though that I've had some success in business, but she always believed in job more than anything. So I did get a job. I worked for the cooperators. But I worked 4 years in corporate Canada. And I could definitely, I definitely felt, you know, that as a Black person, you know, despite the fact that I'm really positive on, like, you know, at least I try to be as positive as possible about outlook on life and stuff like that. But I really felt like I had no chance to succeed in that space, you know, which is why I left. You know, I worked at the cooperatives, and I worked for another company on Bay Street, mortgage investors and stuff like that. But I never really felt like, you know, in this space. And thank God that I was, you know, comfortable to not have a job and be able to support myself. But I can see where a lot of people, you know, really feel like that's a huge jump to make. And this is why you know, we're doing what we're doing with Afrobeats, to really encourage people to say, you know what, if you feel like, hey, this space here, you can't succeed in this space, guess what? There's a whole nother world that you don't know about yet. And we can help you in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. Yes. So let's jump right in. So what is Afrobiz? How is it helping businesses that are Black owned, and where do you see it going next?
Well, you know what? At the very beginning of Afrobiz, I just called it a Black-owned business directory. But it's grown to a lot more than that, okay? Now, the original idea was that, okay, so if I come across somebody and, you know, I say, hey, I can help you, you know, get some customers online, you know, they'll start getting scared because they're like, oh, this guy is trying to sell me leads and these different kind of things, right? What I decided to do is that, okay, I'm going to create a directory, okay? And if you go on Afrobiz, it's a very different directory than going on Yelp, for example, okay? And in the sense that, you know, when I started designing Afrobiz, I say, well, I want to be able to support this business and expose this business to the community in a way that we communicate, okay? So, as a group of people, and you look at the history of Africa and stuff like that, we're very visual people. We're very, you know, we like warm colors, you know. And I just didn't want to put like a name and a phone number and a, you know, email address, right? You know, that's why when you go on the platform, okay, it's very vibrant looking, but at the same time, you have a business, there's a little description of the business, and instead of you just grabbing a phone number on there and calling them, we send the traffic straight to that business webpage. So by sending traffic to that business webpage, and I'm going to get a little bit technical here, okay, but how traffic lands on your webpage is that if you are getting what they call link juice, okay, from a website that has more authority than yours, then it helps your authority to go up. So essentially, for example, if Rogers was to write an article about what you do, you all of a sudden have more authority than the next person that does what you do. Okay, so I thought that if I can create a platform like this, okay, it's going to rank well for a lot of different categories, and that traffic is going to lead directly to these businesses. Okay, so that was the idea. I didn't know how well it's going to work. I thought it was really going to work, but the idea was that, you know, you can start your business today, but by starting your business today and putting your website out there, you might get 2 or 3 person to visit your website monthly. But now, because of a platform like Afrobiz, you know, you're getting way more traffic, you know, because Afrobiz itself, as of right now, we get 20, 30,000 visits on a monthly basis, okay? But those visits don't stay on Afrobiz, you know? That's what you call a link juice, which means somebody click this and they click this and they click this, and it's like traffic goes in a certain direction. It's no different than building a highway, you know, and all the businesses that are right at the exit benefit, right? So all the business on there, we have a different category, and I wanted to build it this way to help them to get more sales, okay? And at the very beginning, I also decided that, you know what, okay, this whole idea is eventually going to be able to support itself. But until we get to the end of what we're trying to do, I committed myself to not charge businesses to be on the platform. Okay. I've been funding the platform myself. We do receive donations for some people that want to support what we do. And then we have also some products, to help business further what they can do on the internet that also support the platform. Okay. So that's essentially where it started. Okay. Now, from that, in the very beginning, when people were adding their business, we were doing this manually. Okay. So we started in Toronto, and in Toronto for a while, we had, you know, about 100 and some change businesses. And then it grew across Canada. Okay. And it really grew because of demand. People would say, hey, you know what? We want something like this in our city. So we grew across Canada, and we are in over 70 cities in Canada. And you would think, okay, well, over 70 cities, well, there are some businesses, like, for example, we are getting ready to put Prince George on the website, you know, and people are wondering, like, is there black people in Prince George? Well, you know what? There are a few black people. However, You know, there are many online businesses and black businesses can accept business from all kinds of people. They don't have to, this is not a platform just for black people to purchase on. There are actually all type of people that want to support their local businesses and support black-owned businesses in Canada. So they go on this platform to buy products. There are a lot of products that are being bought by all kinds of people, you know, of all backgrounds, you know. So that's really cool, you know, and then they get to find out the businesses that are on the platform. And some people, for example, that live in Prince George don't realize that there are black businesses there, you know, and this is a really cool way to find out who they are, you know. So for the business to be on the platform is completely free, okay? And now, once you get a taste of what Afrobeats can do for you, then you can expand your presence in multiple cities and multiple countries, because we are currently in the United States. We are building about 200 cities in the United States, UK, France. We're building a platform there. And we're not going to stop there. The idea is to connect the Black community, the Black business community all over the world. So we will also build the Caribbean, South America, and Africa. Currently, we have the website in French and English, like in Quebec. We have a French part of it. Obviously, Afrobeats in France is in French. But we will eventually have it also. We have like people in Germany that want it, but we're not there yet because we're a very small team of people. And but that's the idea. The idea is to connect the whole Black business community. And then for people to be known locally, it's completely free. And then if you want to be known worldwide, then for very little amount of money, you can expand your online presence.
Love it. Love it. That is incredible. That's awesome. And so thank you for sharing all of that. That's great. 70 countries is a lot. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was just one thing, you know.
Oh, okay. That was just one thing. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So we actually, you know, offer more than that. So we help businesses that want to build their own websites. Okay. We actually will be launching this month a new platform where businesses can start their website for as little as $400. So all of these digital services that we offer are all meant to encourage Black entrepreneurship, okay? And these businesses, now last year, around this time, we were all over social media, the news, everything, because unfortunately the George Floyd murder you know, put us in the spotlight, because a lot of people thought that, you know, one of the solutions to situations like that stop happening is to support Black businesses. Okay. So a lot of people from all types of communities, I mean, there was a march downtown Toronto. I participated at that march. There was all kinds of people. I met a lady. She was part of a group called Filipinos for Black Lives and stuff like that, you know. So it was all kinds of people that wanted to be to participate, right, in helping this problem being resolved. We got a lot of hits. We went on TV in many different cities across Canada, a bunch of radio shows and stuff like that. And that drove a lot of traffic on our website. On one day, actually today is the 6th? Oh, 3rd. I'm moving a little too fast. Yeah. But actually, around this time last year, I think it was June 4th of last year, we got 258,000 hits on the website in one day. Okay. So that really boosted a lot of businesses that were on Afrobeats. Their sales went through the roof, you know, and we got a whole bunch of people that sent us messages of thank you. I mean, they were thinking about closing their business, because at that point we're about 2 months within the, you know, lockdown, you know, So this changed everything, you know, and then it also encouraged a lot of people to actually start their business. A lot of Black-owned businesses started last year, I think more than ever, you know. So in order to further support these businesses, we created the very first Black-owned affiliate network in Canada. And essentially the idea behind that is that, you know, for all the people that want to support it, it's great that you want to support it, but it's always good if you can find a win-win-win formula. You know, you're not supporting because you want to get paid, but if you get paid, then it's great, right? So we created a system where business join the network, okay? And once they join the network, then affiliates that are in the network can support all of the businesses in the network, right? And the few businesses that got started on it have done really well, okay? There are a couple of businesses that we have in the network that get most of their sales from Afrobiz, you know? So that's really cool, okay? And also for affiliates, this is a way to make money because mm-hmm. you promote these businesses and then you get a commission that they give you as a thank you for the sales that you create. So it's something that we have been working on that we will expand further. It's a really cool way to actually get the communities and people that want to support these businesses. It's a really cool way to get them involved in that process. Okay. What we wanted to do also to further support this business is to create a marketplace where they can sell, showcase their product. Now, the marketplace we created is a different marketplace. It's an affiliated marketplace, you know? Mm-hmm. So we drive the traffic to the marketplace and eventually people click on products and then it takes them directly to your buy now page, you know? So this is a really cool thing that I'm so happy to be able to, you know, think of these ideas and put it together. And this is just the beginning of what we can do in the community, and we hope that actually a lot of people will understand, because I think right now there's still a gap in understanding what this can do for business in the community. There are some businesses that I talk to and they don't necessarily completely understand the grand idea. But we'll get there, and there are more and more businesses that understand this. I mean, we have grown to, we probably, I don't even know the exact number, but we probably are dealing in terms of affiliates and stuff like that with about 60 companies, you know, and you know, many of them make sales on a regular basis, you know. Depending on your product and stuff like that. But that's a really cool thing, you know? So that's what Afrobiz is. So it's not one thing. It's not just a business directory. We just call it a global platform for Black-owned businesses, okay, and the people that want to support Black-owned businesses. And I want to add one thing, a little side note. You know, a lot of people don't understand, why should I support Black businesses, you know? Why should I do that? You know, some people think it's racist, you know, even though they have organizations in every, you know, different groups of people and stuff like that. But the reason why is because Black-owned businesses are local businesses. They are businesses that support your local schools, your roads, you know, that make sure that unemployment is not so high, because it's higher in Black business, in Black communities. So these are people that could probably either have a business or be employed by a business inside of their communities. So it does a lot of good to their local community. And that's why it's very important, because you do have like other communities that are also minorities, but you know, they don't have the necessarily all of the issues we have. And I just think if there is a part of your community, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Black, but if in your community there's a group of people that's vulnerable, do what you can to support these people because they're part of your community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you. I have so much to say about what you've shared. Well, first of all, Afrobiz, amazing. I'm all for affiliate marketplaces, affiliate networks, all of that stuff, because it's a win-win situation. The businesses win, and the people who are either consumers of those businesses, those products, or people just looking to make something on the side. And that could literally just be anybody. It's a way for anyone to make money on the side. And that's the thing with affiliate marketing. More often than not, you do some work and you set up certain, automated things, or even if you posted about it a few times, I don't know, if you happen to have a platform or you tell your friends about it, that's all you need to do. You don't need to do anything else. You don't have to ship products. You don't have to make products. All you got to do is get someone else to buy a product that you recommend, which is just, it's such a win-win situation. So I'm very excited that you have included this into Afrobiz and worked it in. And so I'm also excited to see where else Afrobiz goes, because I'm imagining you're going to keep coming up with innovative ways to continue to help Black-owned businesses, to continue to solve this problem, to continue to really have an impact on local communities. So well done. Super exciting. Yeah, well done. Yeah, definitely. I just want to take a moment to say, well done. It's awesome.
Well, no problem. Thank you very much. You know, actually, some of the things that we've been able to do, there are some complete strangers, which are not strangers, we thank them, that along the times that since we started in 2017, that gave us donations to support what we're doing. Not necessarily only financial donations. Some people gave their time, and we thank these people, you know. And for your listeners, you know, if this is something that that you want to support, you think it's pretty cool, even if it's not financially, we welcome them to get in touch with us, and we're more than glad to just share the knowledge on what we're doing and share the experience with you. And we are ambitious on what we're trying to do, but ambition alone can't be funding all of these ideas that I've talked about. We need people and we need money, but we're not desperate for money, but it will be great. But thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about these things that we're doing.
Yeah, my pleasure. Do you have any final thoughts to share with the audience?
Well, you know what? With the pandemic and all of the things that happened, it stirred a lot, and it continues to stir a lot. In the beginning of our conversation, I mentioned about the Black Entrepreneurship Loan Fund, which is, I'm a person that I believe that, you do need funds to start your business, but I do believe that, you have to be able to invest in yourself as well. And I don't necessarily believe that getting money to start your business is always the best thing, I think you have to kind of go through the struggle to succeed in business, So for people that, I lost my train of thought. I can't think of where the direction I was going in, but I can't come back. It's not.
It's all good. It's all good. You were talking about the Black Entrepreneurs Loan Fund, and then you were saying something about, money itself is not enough to really ensure success.
Right.
You probably need to learn some lessons.
Right. And where I was actually going to go with that is that a lot of people are actually excited about this fund, but there's another group of people that basically are mad that the government is involved in this and they don't think it's going to do anything. But what I want to say is that the most important is that you get to know these people in your community that are trying to better the community. And for those people that are in the community that want to start their businesses, you know, don't think that, you know, you can start it just because you're getting money. You need to actually be able to work hard and get out there and learn everything about your craft in order to succeed. And that's it.
Awesome. Beautiful. It sounds like it came back to you.
Yeah.
It came back to you. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Willie. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for the conversations. Thank you for teaching us about AfroBiz and telling us a bit more about your life. I am looking forward to seeing the way AfroBiz unfolds. And for those of you listening, definitely check AfroBiz out. And if you're interested, like Willie mentioned, in getting involved and contributing and supporting, reach out. I will be sure to include all of the ways in which you can connect with Willie as well. Thank you, Willie.
No problem. And for the people checking out the website, there's four websites. So in Canada is afrobiz.ca, in the United States is afrobizworld.com, in UK is afrobiz.uk, and in France is afrobiz.fr. And check it out. And if you have any suggestions or anything, feel free to reach out.
All right. Right on. Thank you, Willie.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Well, that was episode 5 of the Almas podcast. I can't believe we're here already. And that was such a great conversation. I don't know about you, but I learned a lot about AfroBiz. And I'm so grateful that I did. I'm so happy to see someone building something like an affiliate network, a directory of Black-owned businesses, giving people the opportunity to make money on the side, you know, through you know, affiliate marketing, which, you know, in other words, really just means recommend a product to someone and then make a commission off of it, which could happen in a number of ways. But the fact that somebody is doing that specifically geared towards Black-owned businesses just absolutely means the world to me. And I'm sure to some other folks out there, probably many folks, it also means a whole lot as well. I am truly, truly grateful for the people out there who are doing their part to uplift the Black community, to uplift the community of people of color, because when we uplift the Black and Indigenous communities, everyone else will benefit, I can assure you. And you know, that's just a reality. It's an unfortunate reality. However, it is a reality. And so it is important that you support Black-owned businesses, Indigenous businesses, businesses of all people of color, really. And you know, for those of you listening who are not a person of color, if you are not a person of color and you are wondering how you can support, well, this is one of the ways you can do it. Just get out there and start buying products from businesses that are owned by people of color. Start engaging, start supporting them, start telling other people about them. And do that more and more. And of course, you know, do that in addition to actually learning things, understanding things, having conversations, really figuring out what allyship is, and what you can do to actually be an ally. That's what you can do, and I hope that you do. And for those of you who don't, well, I'm just not going to say it because this is not the platform for it. But thank you for listening, everyone. Please do share this far and wide. And if you have anyone that you think should be on the podcast, reach out, of course, and check out AfroBiz. There were so many websites there. I'm not going to attempt to remember them all. I know there's afrobizworld.com and afrobiz.ca. The other two were in the UK and France. I will be sure to add that in the description so you can just click away. Check it out. Support AfroBiz. Support Black-owned businesses. And come back to listen to episode 6 because it's coming up soon.